and we'll do the last verse where Bhagavan now gives his own example. He says, okay, I talked about Janaka, I talked about leaders, I talked about parents, but for me, Arjuna, for me, what is for me to do? Look at me. So he gives his own example for us also to understand what Bhagavan does.
Name parthasti kartavyam.
Name parthasti kartavyam.
Trishu lokeshu kinchana.
Trishu lokeshu kinchana.
Nana vaptam avaptavyam.
Nana vaptam avaptavyam.
Varta eva cha karmani.
Varta eva cha karmani.
We can say together,
Name parthasti kartavyam. Trishu lokeshu kinchana. Nana vaptam avaptavyam. Varta eva cha karmani.
So Bhagavan says, na me, for me, na means no, O Partha, O Arjuna, asti kartavyam. There is nothing for me to do. Kartavyam here means there is nothing for me to do. Trishu lokeshu, in the three worlds, all the three worlds, heaven, earth, and even the lower worlds, kinchana, there is nothing for me to do in the three worlds. Na anavaptam. Anavaptam means unattained. So there is nothing unattained and avaptavyam, and to be attained, to be got. So there is nothing that I have not attained, and there is nothing that I need to attain. Krishna says, in these three worlds, in all the three worlds, there is nothing. Varte, varte, here of course A is gone because of the sandhi, A is ka lop ho gaya, is disappeared, but it is varte. Varte means I am engaged eva, always, chakarmani, in action. Even though there is nothing for me to attain, or that I have not attained in the three worlds, still I am involved in action. So Arjuna says, for me, what does he mean for me? Because Arjuna till now thought that Krishna is a wise person, wiser than me, but he's a human being. He thought he's my charioteer or my friend because he knew him from childhood, or he was also a distant brother-in-law. So he used to think that Krishna is wiser than me, that's why he's giving me advice. But what Krishna is trying to tell us, and slowly through the third, fourth, and by the 11th chapter, he shows that he's not an ordinary human being, he's not even a dev or a devta, but he's the infinite Brahman appearing, walking, talking in the human form. That's why in the 11th chapter, he shows the Virat Roop, where in his body, Arjuna sees not only this world and this, but all the worlds. He sees the heavens and he sees all the ghosts and the goblins and the snakes and the lower worlds and everything he sees in Krishna's body. He sees past, present and future. He also sees how the Kauravas will be killed. So and that's why anybody who thinks that Krishna was an ordinary human being or was just a devta is highly mistaken, because he was the manifestation of the Supreme Brahman himself. So when he says that there is nothing for me to do, what he means, he does not mean Krishna, the son of Devaki, or Krishna, the beloved of the gopis, but Krishna, that infinite Brahman, that consciousness which has appeared on this earth as the human being. So he says, for me, as that infinite consciousness, as Brahman, there is nothing for me to attain, right? For the Brahman, the supreme consciousness, everything is that. So there is nothing for Krishna to attain that he has not attained or that he is yet to attain. So what it means is that I am that supreme consciousness for me. And he will make it more clear in the fourth chapter, where he will say that I am the one who taught this knowledge to the sun god, and Arjuna even asks him, oh, you were only born 65 years ago. How could you have taught this knowledge to the sun god? And then, of course, Krishna answers that. So the point is that here the Lord is saying that even though I am that supreme consciousness, for me there is nothing to do which I have not attained, but still I am working without doership, without enjoyership, because he says, I don't do anything as the consciousness, I don't. But when I have taken human birth, it is my duty to perform whatever station I have been placed. When he was with the gopis, he did his duties there. He played the Ras Leela and all. Then he went to Kamsa, he took care of that. And then he was ruler for a while. And then he gave up the kingdom, and then he came to the Pandavas. And he worked as Arjuna's charioteer. Imagine the Lord of the universe, Brahman himself, and who is himself a king. He was king of Mathura and then later on of Dwarka. And he is working as Arjuna's charioteer, like his chauffeur, driving his chariot. Not only he was driving his chariot, it was so interesting that, the war lasted for 18 days. Every day in the evening when the war ended, Arjuna would go to his tent and have dinner and sleep, because he's the king, right? He's the general, he's the leader of the army. And what would Krishna do? Krishna would take the horses to the stables, untie them from the chariot, wash their feet, wash their legs, and put ointment on their feet, because they had been running in the hot, ground all day. And then he would feed them and he would give them a bath. And after doing all that, then he would eat and fall asleep. So imagine the Lord of the universe is himself washing the horse's feet and putting on. That's the example of Karma Yoga. If you want to see, you don't need to go far. I mean, you could see. That's why when Krishna preaches Karma Yoga, it comes from his actions, not from his words. That's why yat yat acharati shrestha, not vadati. As the wise person acts, so everybody acts. Not as he speaks. So that is very important. So he did his duty even though there was nothing for him to achieve. So what he is saying is that even though you might have become successful, you may have attained a lot, you may be very strong, you may be very powerful, you may be very successful, but never forget that you are on this earth to serve, to help the world, and to remember God and reach God. So continuously, every morning, get up and remember the Lord, chant his name for a while, meditate, and then do not leave touch with God. So that's why this Bhagavad Gita is a very beautiful text for us, to remind us that we are all not doers, but we are instruments of the Lord. Even in the 11th chapter, Bhagavan says, Maye nihata purvam eva nimitta matram bhava savya sachin. Oh, left-handed warrior, oh Arjuna, you think you are going to kill all of these people, these soldiers, these Kauravas? They have already been killed by me. The time has already come. And he shows Arjuna that, he shows him that in this fire of his mouth, all the Kaurava soldiers are going. Karna is going, Bhishma is going, Drona is going, Duryodhana is going, all the soldiers are going. So he says that you are not doing it. If you think you are doing it, you are foolish. Because Arjuna, compared to Bhishma, he was nowhere near Bhishma. Compared to Drona, compared to Karna. Karna was as great a warrior as him. Drona and Bhishma were much greater. Drona was his teacher. Bhishma had Ichha Mrityu. Bhishma could not be killed unless he decided to die. So compared to them, Arjuna was a great warrior, but not of that caliber. The Kaurava army was much bigger than the Pandava army. So what he's telling Arjuna, that I am behind you, the Lord of the universe, the infinite, is when God is with you, who can be against you? Nobody can touch you. There are so many bhajans. If Ram is with you, then who can be against you? That is, Janaki Nath Sahai Kare, to kaun bigad kare tar nardi. It's a beautiful bhajan. I listened to it so many times. So that's what Krishna is telling, that as the Lord of the universe, I have nothing to gain, but when I take birth, then I do whatever my duty is. And we see the same thing in Ramchandraji. When Ramchandraji appeared, he did his duty, even though his father asked him to go to the forest 14 years. His father had promised, he went. He didn't say, I am the Supreme Consciousness, Brahman appearing as Ramchandraji, which he was, because he shows that in a couple of places, that he was not an ordinary, you know, people say Adarsh Purush. He was not an Adarsh ideal person, but he was the Lord himself. That's why he is worshipped. So the idea is that wherever you are, there is no mistake in the creation. Even a blade of grass is not created by accident. Every insect, every bird, every fish, every bacteria, every virus, everything has a role to play. So wherever I have been placed, without complaining, why is this happening to me? Why have I been here? Why am I? This place is meant for me to grow. It is meant for me to evolve. That's why this universe is said to be a school where we come to learn, to evolve, and learn the lesson. And just as lessons have to be learned, so that is the purpose of this three verses, that we are here to do our duty, and let us take examples of Janaka and Krishna, and let us be an example to our children and others who follow us. So we have about 15 minutes. Any comments, any questions?
What are your thoughts on killing the insects? You mentioned every insect has a purpose, and every insect, it has Atman too, right?
Right.
So if I'm killing a roach or a spider, Am I performing my duty, Arjuna is performing his duty?
Right. I think the point, what I how I interpret is that suppose there is a roach crawling outside. You don't stomp on him. He's not doing anything wrong to you.
Right.
But if he's come into your house,
right,
or a rat or ants, because we live on an ant hill. Once ants start coming, hundreds and thousands of them will come. They'll take over your kitchen, take over your house. Then it is your duty to protect for your own welfare, for your own health, because cockroach will bring disease, or rat is there. Rat will bring all kinds of droppings, and then, will bring illness. So then it is your duty to set up a trap to capture the rat. For the higher, the lower has to be sacrificed. But two things you should do. One is you should not get joy in that. I killed him. No. Bhagwan, I'm sorry, I know you are in this, but I don't have a choice, because this is where I live, and for my health, for my maintenance of myself and my children, my family, my children, they have to be. I'm doing it, apologize to God, and I'm sorry I have to do it, because life is in that too. In fact, a Muniji, there's a Muniji, I've talked about him many times, and he has not come lately, he used to come every year, speak in Hindi, and he used to say that even grass has life. So if you can avoid stepping on grass, so if you have to cut across, or you can take a little longer route on cement, walk on cement, because to walk across grass is you're also committing a sin. You're hurting that. And suppose you have no choice, like there is only grass and I'm stuck, then you apologize to the grass. I'm sorry, I have to step on you. And if possible, avoid and step the least possible. So life is there even in the grass. So even when you step on grass, you should be very conscious that I'm stepping on life. So respect life everywhere, but when you don't have a choice, then you do it with an apology, that I'm sorry I'm stepping on you, but I don't have a choice, like that. Like say you have to, go to your swimming pool or turn on the sprinkler or something like that, and you have to walk across the grass. But if possible, avoid it. Take the long way, and I try my best to do that. I avoid step. Since he taught me, I do that. I go around, I go the long way, and people think this guy is nuts, and he could go straight. But, it's good, because that way you see the Brahman everywhere. I mean, not that I have, but I try as much as possible. But that is a long answer to your short question. Yeah. Thank you. That's a very good question. Yeah.
Oftentimes, just in our day-to-day activities, for example, if I'm driving down the freeway and if I'm speeding, then I know I'm possibly going to break the
right.
law or violate it, so I know I'm going to get the ticket. So in other words, I'm committing, quote unquote, a minor infraction or a crime,
mm-hmm.
if you will. But when it comes to a thought, how once a negative thought takes place, because you're saying the sons or these you know great Mahatmas did not even have a negative thought. But when we have a negative thought, how can we negate it or how can we overcome it? And where is this origin of the thought? You know?
Yeah. See, the origin of all thoughts are from Brahman. It's from the consciousness. Without consciousness, there will be no thought. A person is who's dead, there cannot be a thought. So a person to be alive has to have God in them. So all thoughts arise from Brahman, but they are modified by my vasanas. Depending on my good or bad vasanas, I create good or bad thoughts. So God is there even in the gangster, he's there even in the criminal, he's there even in the saint, he's there even in the Mahatma, he's there in everybody. So when a negative thought arises, one has to live alertly. And that's why meditation helps, because it makes you aware of your thoughts. Once you have been regularly meditating, then when this negative thought arises, or a thought of anger or a thought of jealousy, then it disturbs your mind. And your mind, which is used to being peaceful, in this morning meditation, my mind was so peaceful, I'm thinking, and then suddenly this negative thought comes. It disturbs us, just as a person living in Alaska, you know, and he enjoys living in, and suddenly he's put in the desert, Sahara desert. You know, where did I come? So similarly, when I'm used to my mind being peaceful, then when a negative thought comes, I immediately recognize, okay, this thought is not good. It's disturbing my mind. So the first thing is recognition. Then once you are aware of the thought, then and only then you can remove it. And for that, there are many ways. What does the Gita say about it? Or what would my father or my mother, if they heard that I'm having these thoughts or doing these actions, what would they think? Because thought ultimately leads to wrong actions. So either what would my guru think, or what would God think, or what would my mother or father think that I am doing such things or I am thinking such thoughts. So with the right understanding, you become aware of the thought. And then trying to remove a thought is not possible. Like if I tell you, don't think of bananas right now, whatever you do, don't think of bananas. What will you do? Think of bananas. So if you say, I must not think of the negative, I must not think of this guy I dislike, the more you will think. So become a witness to the thought and watch the thought. Okay, the negative thought is arising. Let it arise, but I am not the thought. I am that consciousness, Brahman. The thought is arising in me and I am sustaining the thought, but I am not going to support the thought. I'm going to watch it. Okay, there's a negative thought. I don't like this person. Okay, who doesn't like? My mind doesn't like, right? But I am Brahman and I am the same in all. So my mind may not like, but I am not that. So slowly as you become a witness, you can then the thought, you are no longer supporting the thought. See, how does the thought get strong? By we provide fuel, we provide support to the thought. So when you stop providing support to the thought, then the thought, just as I was just listening yesterday to a very wonderful discourse, he says when a lamp is lit, how does the lamp go out? Either a strong gust of wind or the fuel runs out, say the oil. If there's no longer any oil, then the lamp will burn out. So similarly, a vasana, a negative vasana or a negative thought, how can it be destroyed? Either by knowledge, that is the strong gust of wind, by right understanding, I should not have this thought, or by not supporting the vasana. How do we support our vasanas? If you keep on doing negative things, your vasanas will, negative vasanas will become stronger. The stronger your vasanas, the stronger your negative thoughts. So either you do not provide fuel to the thought by doing wrong action or by right knowledge. So those are the two ways to remove negative thoughts. I hope this answers.
It does, but I think it's it's very difficult. Or at least I find it very difficult.
Yes.
If not next to impossible.
Right.
I mean, even just simple things, even like I said in daily life, if somebody cuts you off on the road, but you know, there's a saying in Hindi, sankalp se shruti, I think.
Right.
As you think, as you are.
Right. I think with practice it happens, with maturity. Like, I'm not joking, today a bus cut me off. I'm saying, what's wrong with you? I used to be driving, I used to be a crazy driver. I used to drive so fast, get so many tickets. Now I just drive. And I said, oh my God, a bus cut you off? What's wrong with you? So, you know, that's maturity. I don't know whether I'm matured or not, but it changes. You know, once you get into this knowledge, I remember I used to be a very, very restless driver. Now I drive very coolly. People want to, not that I'm, you know, driving the left lane. I usually drive in the right lane and people want to overtake. So I think by utilizing this knowledge, slowly, I think it's abhyasena tu konteya, Krishna says, abhyasa, with practice and with vairagya, with detachment. Yes.
Those three things would really get you off the negative.
Very true.
Love all, forgive all.
And understanding, right?
And understand. Forgiveness is not just forgiving, but understanding.
Right.
All make mistakes, they all do
right
things.
True forgiveness, as she said, is not even to know that I was hurt. See, even when the fact that, see, one is that I was hurt, but I forgive you. That's one. Second is to even remove the thought that I was hurt. That is highest forgiveness. Yes. Thank you.
The ant, you know, I kill ants a lot. And every time I kill ant, I said, I'm sorry, I'm killing you, but you might have better, I pray that you have better life next time. That's
right.
Automatically comes in my mind because... I mean, I have to care. What can I say? One soldier comes, and if I don't kill it, millions will come.
Millions will come, right.
I say a little prayer.
Right, same thing. Yeah, whatever you do, right. And see Lord in them. Right. No, that's true. Whatever. But it's good. At least you're becoming aware that God is everywhere. That's good.
Just in this 22nd verse, he's saying that there is nothing in this three words that I have to do anymore. So that he is talking like a Lord.
Right.
But the Lord, in the end he says, I engage myself in action. If it's an infinite Lord, he is not doing any action.
Right.
He is basically a witness. But there is he speaking like Krishna.
Right.
Yes, I engage in action. He says that.
Yes. Now that's
that portion is
right.
Talking as though he's the brother-in-law of Arjuna.
Right. That's right. That's a very good question. It's like an actor. I mean, he's playing the role of a beggar, and then next day he's playing the role of a king. He knows he's neither the beggar nor the king, but he's that actor playing the role. So, but when he's playing the role of the beggar, he does it to the best of his abilities. People actually give him money. When he's playing the role of the king, people salute him. So similarly, Krishna, even though he's the infinite consciousness, Bhagavan, at that moment he's playing the role of Arjuna's brother-in-law, Arjuna's driver, Arjuna's friend, and beloved of the gopis, and daughter and son of Devaki. So he performs his duties to the best of his ability, whatever, wherever he has placed himself. See, he has not been placed. Bhagavan Krishna himself, when he says avatar, that means he himself manifests. It's not that there is some Brahman who has created Krishna or who has created Ram, but that same Brahman himself has decided to manifest himself as Krishna. So yes, so then whatever role he's playing, he knows I am that supreme consciousness. But right now, that's why he's washing that horse's feet. Because he says, I'm a charioteer. I'm not the Lord of the universe. I'm playing the role. I have been assigned to play that role. I volunteered to be, no, Arjuna asks him, I want you to drive my chariot. And he said, okay, I'll do it. So then he's the best charioteer in the world. He saves Arjuna so many times when all these weapons are coming, he drops the chariot, you know, raises, does everything. Then he's the best charioteer in the world. So yes.
But he also has to show, because people look up to him to follow his action also.
Right.
Not knowing who he is.
Right.
Whatever he does, people look up to him.
Right.
So he's a supreme leader there at the time, so he has to do his action.
Exactly.
Even though he's not to get anything out of it.
Right.
So he's showing how to live really, actually.
Exactly. Right. How one should live. That's true. Thank you.
I always tell the Krishna Bhakta, I said, why don't you follow him? Forget about everything and just see how he lived.
Right.
And live like that.
True. Anything else? Okay, just two announcements. July 25 to 27, Swami Swarupananda Ji will be here. He's the worldwide head of Chinmaya Mission. We are very fortunate to have him 3 days out of 270 centers. He visits, he's so busy, he has graciously agreed to come. So it is a wonderful opportunity. And the topic he has chosen, Storm to Perform, we have books in the office. If you would like to buy it ahead of time and go through it, he's a most wonderful teacher. Those of you who haven't heard him, very clear. His English is perfect and his ability to explain and his devotion to Gurudev is unparalleled. You won't find a greater devotee. So take advantage of this opportunity to listen to him. It's from Wednesday to Friday, 7 to 8:30 in July. And then on Friday, the July 27th, we are celebrating Guru Purnima. Guru is the one because of whom we have all this knowledge. So we are honoring and prostrating to our Guru on July 27th at 6 p.m. And Swami Swarupananda Ji himself will be on the stage. So if you wish to sponsor, first of all, we should all attend, come early that day, so that we can be part of the Guru Paduka Puja. Then if you would like to sponsor, please contact Neeru. She will let you know how to sponsor the Guru Purnima Puja. So that is the two upcoming events. Anything else? Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.